Hello, I'm Joseph McClendon III, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you to the Primal Power Podcast.
My name is Richard Delet, and I'm the founder of the lifestyle platform Oersterk, which means Primal Power. We are based in the Netherlands, and this is our first international podcast episode. Our guest of today is Joseph McClendon III. He's a doctor of neuropsychology and one of the most famous specialists in the field of ultimate performance. I'm eager to know more about his tips for a better life. Maybe you already noticed, English is not my first language. So I'm stretching my comfort zone here today. Let's start.
De Oersterk podcast. Een ontdekkingstocht naar een beter leven.
Joseph, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's an honor to have you in our studio. Last weekend you gave the A Factor seminar in Amsterdam.
Yes, sir.
How was it and what do you think of the Dutch people?
That's a great point. I mean, I'm going to answer your question, the last question first, okay? I really, really enjoy the Dutch people, and I'll tell you specifically why. It's been 5 years since I've been back here, and the Dutch people, compared to almost anywhere else I've ever been, are very straightforward, very honest, and very to the point. And so, having said that, they're also a lot of fun. And the workshop and the seminar and all the things that they tend to really play full out and get into it. So I love the Dutch people. And then secondly, the event was, in my opinion, the best event we've ever done here in Holland. Matter of fact, I don't really do that particular seminar in many other places, so.
Yeah, I was also at the event for a few hours last Saturday.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the energy is always very special, mm-hmm. and the crowd is extremely energetic. Mm-hmm. It's almost contagious.
Yes.
Something about you, you are a doctor of neuropsychology, yes. and are famous as an ultimate performance specialist. Do most people function at the ultimate performance right now?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I would, just my estimation would be easily 80 to maybe 85% of people function way below their level of efficiency, if you will. Most people, for all the reasons that you know, most people do the best they can and do just enough to get by and they want to. I think most people want to do more and perform better, but they just don't know how. Or they have been conditioned, and as you know, through the foods that we eat and the things that we do, their energy is low, so they don't have the energy to do it, they don't have the mindset to do it, and they don't have the skills to be able to do it as well.
Yeah, because you have a remarkable ability to get straight to the core of the challenge and bring about rapid change in people. What themes do you often find at the core of a challenge?
Most of the time it's psychology. I always go like this. I always say that it starts with what we think. And how we think influences how we feel. And how we feel obviously influences what we do. And so when I say psychology, I just mean what we think about ourselves, what we think about other people, and what we think about our environment or the world around us. And unfortunately, in this day and age, and it's been this way for a long time, our thinking has been influenced by media and now, you know, cell phones and all those things. And people don't really access their true power, which is to decide what to think those things enough times to believe those things so that they feel a certain way so that they do certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I attended your seminar last weekend, I thought almost everyone only takes action when they have problems or negative emotions in their lives. Your A-Factor seminar contains many powerful exercises that you can apply every day. But why have we learned in society to work preventively on our mental health and thus make more impact in our lives?
Why have we not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, there is more money in keeping us sick and scared and like sheep. Mm-hmm. than there is in keeping people healthy and doing the things that are going to improve their lives, unfortunately. And so, in my personal opinion, people like yourself that have a vested interest and a love. You know, you spoke to me earlier about how you came to where you are, and people like yourself who know that you not only you can make a change, but you can go to the root of the change and make that change be sustainable through time. There's, I believe that people like yourself and myself, there's starting to be more and more of us and people that are listening, and those of you that are listening now, you're here because you want more. And I think there's starting to be more and more people that are starting to recognize, oh, wait a minute, what I have been doing is not working and I want more. So I go different places and learn different things.
Yeah. If I look to my own path, I'm really interested in the human body, in health, but also in evolutionary medicine.
Yes.
When I look at you, then many people suffer from fears, phobias, and emotional challenges that have a negative impact on their lives.
Yes, in all aspects of their
lives. Yeah, and I thought, is that a mistake of evolution? Because we are not protected with an automatic solving program in the brain. So we have to do some effort by ourselves.
I think it is an effect of what I call devolution versus evolution. I think that every animal, every plant, and everything is designed to evolve to be better. The strong survive, you know, all of those things. I think, again, and I hate to keep going back to this, but it is kind of my pet peeve that media and whether it is, you know, on your cell phone, social media, and all those things that, I believe that mankind was never meant to be entertained all the time. I believe that the world around us is put around us so that we can learn from it, so that we can go and get something, so that we can grow from it, so that we can build things, so that we can make changes. That's what makes us unique, as opposed to any other animal on the planet. I shouldn't say any other animal, because you look at an insect, an ant, what do? They build their homes, they build all of these things. But human beings, we've got a different kind of brain. And when, especially something like social media and cell phones and television and all those things, that those devices are designed to keep us focused right here and be entertained and to take away our creativity. You don't have to be creative to watch a show that all the creativity is done for you. And as a result, I believe that we are devolving as human beings. That mechanism in our brain that you were talking about is atrophying. If you don't, it's like a muscle. If you don't use it, it's not going to get any stronger. And I think that muscle of creativity, of self-thinking, of self-reliance, building, and all those things has gotten weaker in mankind in general, unfortunately.
Yeah, and is there a relationship or a correlation between maybe you can say the use of cell phones and also the interaction between mind, body, and soul?
No doubt. No doubt, because you don't have to think the way that you did before. It's when we're being entertained, and I say entertained, I use that because that's what these things are for. That's what television is for. When we're being entertained, it's information coming in, and only information coming in. It's not information going out. You don't have to figure anything out. You just look at it and laugh, or look at it and get sad or get scared or whatever. And so it's almost doing your thinking for you. It's telling you where to focus. And when that happens, and it happens with anything that we do, if it happens over and over again, then we become used to it, we become addicted to it, and we crave it, and we go in that direction all the time. And the challenge with that is cell phone never shuts off. It's 24/7. And I've been guilty of it myself. I'll start to scroll on, you know, even on my page, I'll start to scroll, and all of a sudden, an hour is gone. And I'll go, oh, wait a minute. And they said that the average person spends 32 hours a week on watching television. 32 hours a week. Most people work a 40-hour week. That means you're spending almost as much time on your phone and on television and things like that as you do working. So if you think about that, if you're spending, say, 6 hours a day in front of the screen, cumulatively, you know, it's not all at once all the time, and 8 hours a day working. And, you know, if you're going to sleep eight hours, how much time are you spending with your family? How much time are you spending with yourself? It's only a couple of hours. And so that is, to me, is part of the problem.
Yeah, but then you have to have a vision for your life. And you have to, because a lot of evenings I'm walking with my dog outside.
Yes.
And I'm always watching in the homes of the people. And a lot of people are sitting on the couch
watching television. Yeah.
Almost 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
So that's the normal. So yes. We have to change the normal and maybe also invest every evening 1 hour in personal development.
Yeah.
For example.
I would agree with you 100%. And that's why we do what we do, is we're doing our effort to help people wake up. Because nobody, at the end of the year, when they look at their finances or they look at their body and it's not where they want to be, nobody goes, I'm glad I spent more time watching television. They always go, I wish I would have put that phone down. I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that. I wish I would have done that. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that you and I and people like ourselves, and we have the privilege of helping people wake up sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had a practice in Los Angeles.
I did.
Which is called the Freak City. What have all the sessions brought you as a person?
Say that again, please.
What have all the sessions brought you as a person? So for your own
It's what brought me to my philosophy where it is right now, because the people that would come to me, and that session was, that practice was mainly where I was helping people get over fears and phobias and emotional challenges. There, I started to see a pattern, and I started to see the pattern worsen. And the pattern was depression, low self-esteem, and something that I call the toxic 10, and that is procrastination, hesitation, fear of failure, fear of success, self-doubt, self-loathing, imposter syndrome, stress, overwhelm, and fear of rejection. And that's what I started to see come across in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And I also, I worked on a suicide hotline and things like that. And I started to recognize that going to the core of everything is just helping people recognize how to alleviate or at least mitigate the fear that's going on here inside their head. Because if somebody comes in, they have a fear of dogs, they got a fear of water or whatever, it doesn't just mean when they're in front of water that they're afraid. That lives with them all of the time, and they're afraid of it all the time, and they're afraid of it happening all the time. And so what I started to recognize is, yeah, I can work with those people on as an individual, and I still love doing that, but I, like you and I were talking earlier, I want to be able to affect many, many more people at a time. So to go to the core of it is fear, those 10 things that I just said, everybody suffers from those things. Everybody does. And so I don't just talk about, as you said before, there are processes to not only get over that fear, but make it so that you default to that parasympathetic nervous system, which is not fight or flight. It's like, what can I do? What is possible for me? What do I want to do? What am I, instead of being afraid of something, look at what you want and what you're happy about. And the fear starts to dissipate. And then when that does, then you start to be more of a person that goes and gets what you want and eats healthier and lives your life better and are happier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're saying that you want to serve and help as many people as possible.
Yes, sir.
And that started when you was younger, ever, because you won a scholarship for the first Walt Disney School of Arts in California.
Yes.
That was something you always dreamed of. And then at the age of 17, 3 grown men tried to take your life because of the color of your skin.
Yes.
What happened next?
Well, that almost destroyed me, because I had really great parents. My father was a military man. You know, he was in the United States Air Force, and he was very disciplined, and he had a very good work ethic. So he taught me that. My mother was an artist; she was a singer, and an opera singer, classically trained. And so they gave myself and my sisters a different self-worth, if you will. They were very adamant about not letting us just watch television. They said, my mother would say, you would give me an art pad and she'd go, you make me 10 drawings today, you know, or sit at the piano and play this. My father would, every weekend, we'd work on the car, you know, and we'd do things. So we weren't in front of the television all the time. That was one thing. So I had a very good self-image. But then when those men did that to me, it was interesting because now I intellectualize it. But at the time, I didn't know. It wasn't just that they harmed me physically. It was the things that they said to me about the color of my skin and who I was and everything. And that's what started to live in my mind. And because it did, it destroyed my self-esteem. I started to hear those things over and over again and believe it. And I became homeless. I wound up, you know, I graduated from high school early and I didn't go to the art school. I didn't do anything. I just, you know, lost everything. I lived in a cardboard box. And what changed my life was somebody came along and introduced me to personal development.
Yeah, because someone gave you the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon
yes.
Hill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, was this person part of a created divine plan or was it a coincidence?
This is what I teach, is that we all have the ability to influence the world around us, the universe, God, whatever you want, to bring into our lives the things that we desire, that we need, that we want. And I didn't know it, but that's what I did to bring that person into my life. I didn't know it at the time, but now I look back on it and the events that happened before, and that's what I taught at the event that you just were at. The events that happened before, unknowingly, I brought that gentleman into my life. And so I don't so much believe in coincidence as much as I believe in that we influence things to happen. And he was not a personal development guy. He was not somebody that was a teacher. He had this book, and excuse me. He knew. Excuse me. He knew that this was a book that I could use, and that might use. And he almost tricked me into reading it, because I won't go into the story, but. He insisted that I read the book before I could leave his office. And I before then, I'd never read a whole book in a day. But I started reading that book, and it was so interesting that I couldn't put it down. But here's the thing. Think and Grow Rich is the most popular personal development book there ever has been. It was written in 1937. And it was written by a gentleman, Napoleon Hill, and he was employed by or commissioned by Andrew Carnegie. And what he had him do, he said, I want you to go out and I want you to interview all of the successful people of the day. Rich people, happy people, healthy people, and all that stuff, and find out what they have in common. And that's what the book is about.
The principles.
Yeah, the principles. And I read it, but here's the deal. I'm all over the world. I mean, I've had the privilege of being in front of over 6 million people by now. And when I asked that question, how many of you have read the book? So many people raise their hand. And then I asked the question, how many of you did what the book said? 90% of those hands come down. Because most people will read something and go, that makes sense, that's good advice, but they don't do it. But I was desperate. So I did what the book said. And my life started to change almost immediately because I started doing the exercise. So it's not the desire that changes things. It's not wanting something that's saying something. It's doing something. And so that book taught me not just to change for myself, but it also taught me the fundamentals of giving and teaching people process to be able to do something to create change.
Yeah, because that's also what inspired me, because you not only read the book, but also integrated the exercises on a daily basis in
yes.
your life.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people read the book but don't live it, exactly. Live by it. And why don't most people practice daily physical and mental self-care practices and exercises?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One of them is distraction. I think that there's so many distractions now, you know, going back on cell phones and just not even that, you know, our daily lives. And so if somebody takes the time to read a book, then that's some time that it takes to do it. But then there's also time to do the exercises that you have to put in. So I think that they get distracted on other things. So they'll say, I'll read the book for an hour, and then I got to go, you know, take my son to soccer practice, and then I got to make dinner, and I got to do this and everything. So they don't do the second thing, which is schedule to do what needs to be done.
Make the priority.
Yeah, make it a priority and schedule it. And the third thing is most people are lacking in discipline. Discipline. And discipline to me means doing the prescribed activity as it is prescribed, no matter what, even and especially when it's difficult. And I like to repeat that. Discipline means to do the prescribed activity. If a coach or you read something and it says do A, B, C, D, that's the prescription. Do A, B, C, D as it is prescribed. No matter what. If it's raining outside, if it's, you know, whatever, no matter what, do it. Even and especially when it's difficult. Because it's the difficulty, it's the uncomfortableness that makes people procrastinate. They go, well, I want to get out of that pain, and they go do something else. And they go do something that's easier. They'll go, you know, eat some bad food or you know, play a video game or something like that. It's so much easier to do that. So when it's difficult and you don't want to do it, that's the time to do it. That's when a great deal of the growth is made.
Yeah, and there's also an important difference between action and activity.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that, because a lot of people will take action. As a matter of fact, that is the saying. One, and I hear so many of my contemporaries talk about that action is power. They say knowledge is not power, and it's not, because knowledge is stored information. Your cell phone has a lot of knowledge in it, and we have a lot of knowledge in us. And then they say, but action is power. And it's temporary power. And what that means is, to me, action means you're doing it once or twice or two or three times or for a little while. But then most of us stop. It's because you can take action and go to the gym 5 days, but that's not going to make you healthy. Activity is doing it over and over and over again till A, it becomes automatic with you, a habit with you. You want to do it. And then B, you go past your goal when all of a sudden you realize that, hey, wait a minute, this is who I am, this is my identity, and I not only did I get this result, you know, whether it is, you know, to be healthier, to be happier, to be financially abundant, not only to have that, it's something that I do automatically.
Yeah, you said it all starts with psychology.
Yes.
I watched a TED talk of you from 1 year ago with the title Arresting the Thieves of Your Dreams. Mm-hmm. And in that TED talk, you said, the thieves of your dreams are your own thoughts. What is a thought, and what is the influence of thoughts on our reality?
Beautiful question. I like to be very simple. I like to make everything so simple that everybody can understand it. Thinking is just the words that we're saying to ourselves and the images that we're making in our head. That's it. If you're listening to us right now, you're going, does that make sense? Those are the words that we're saying in our head. And you make an image of whatever it is. And the beautiful part about it is that we can decide what to think. And we can program ourselves to think a certain way. And it the simplest way is just repetition. Literally, if you have something and you read it, how do we memorize something? You read it over and over again, You're looking at those words and you're saying those words over and over again till pretty soon it goes from your conscious mind to your other than conscious mind. And as soon as that happens, then it becomes part of what you naturally think. And there's such, and you probably have seen this. There's a video, if you look on YouTube, there's several of them now. And they show neurons inside the brain connecting. And so repetition makes them connect. And then the more the repetition, now it becomes a direct hard line between your conscious mind and your unconscious mind. And that's when it becomes a habit. That's when it becomes who you are.
It's like neurons that fire together, wire together.
Yeah. Exactly. And having said that, the firing is when they're not together yet. And they keep on firing back and forth, but the more you do it, they finally connect, and it's not a firing, it's a connection, it's a highway, it's like a bloodstream, it's like a water hose, and it just flows all the time. So we can fire neurons all the time. And there's processes, like I said, repetition is one way, but repetition with, when you add other stimulus to it, you can make it happen very, very quickly. For instance, I always tell people this. If you come in, like for example, if somebody is afraid of dogs, okay, it's a connection in their brain. It's not neurons firing. It's connected. So if you come into my office and you get a fear of dogs, take a guess what's going to be in my office.
A dog.
It's going to be a dog. And the reason being is that when you walk into that office and you see that dog, that connection is going to be alive, and then I'm going to do something in that moment to break that connection. And then while that connection is broken, I'm going to put something else in there. I'm going to interrupt that so that connection can't happen anymore. Now, that's an oversimplification, but that's what we did in the over the weekend at the seminar that you were at. Mm-hmm. Is I showed them how to do it. We didn't just do it, and everybody there I say bring me your worst nightmare. Bring me your fear, bring me your worst memory, bring me your inhibition, any of that stuff. And then I teach them this process, it's called the stop technique, and then we do it. And within just a matter of minutes, they can't feel that fear anymore. They can't feel it the way they were. And now they have that tool. And the more you do it, the more they won't be able to feel it. But the best part about it is that we put something else in that place. And so when you come into my office, there's a dog there, the dog is going to scare you, I'm going to interrupt that pattern, but I'm going to put in joy, happiness, comfortableness. So just in a matter of just a few minutes, you're going to be holding that dog, and you're going to be petting that dog, and you're going to be okay with it. And so that transfers into every area of our life. And it is that simple. So I'm long answer to your question about thinking. The thought process, like I said, the psychology, the thought process is we never stop thinking. Even when we dream, we're always thinking, we're always making images, and there's always that chatter going on. And we can determine and decide what we want to think. And the three things that we think about all the time are what we think about ourselves, what we think about other people, and what we think about the world around us. And all of the subsets, those are the three basic things. And the most important one is what we think about ourselves. So on the last day of the workshop that you went to, that's what we do, is we shift and give people a different identity that they get to choose about themselves.
Yeah, beautiful. Because you said, until we decide to take control of our own thought process, we will be at the mercy of circumstance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
But is reality something that doesn't exist because we create it in our own mind?
I think that's great, and that's a great metaphysical conversation to have. And we could talk about that all day long. I will say that the reality that we create in our mind is the reality that we live. So does it exist? I don't know. You know, because I've had these types of conversations with some of my great mentors, and they will say things like, you know, nothing exists at all, period. It's only what we think of. And maybe that's true. I don't know. But I do know that it's like some people can look at, when it's raining outside, their reality is that my day is ruined now because I just washed my car, mm-hmm. and now traffic's going to be bad and all of this stuff. And some people can look at the rain outside and going, it's beautiful. It waters the flowers. Yeah. It cleans the air and all that stuff. So our reality is subjective in that we can decide and do decide what it is in that moment. Let me say it differently. We can choose to decide what it is, or we can allow ourselves to default to what we've already chosen in the past, or what has been chosen for us, or how we've been influenced to think.
Yeah. For me, also in this conversation, it's interesting that there's also a connection between psychology and quantum physics.
Yes, I would agree.
One of your slogans is "Make your fate."
Yes.
Another one is "Dare to make your life magnificent."
Yes.
Why is this so important for you?
Because I always say that life is exactly what you dare to make it, and what that means is if you dare, meaning if you choose to step up to something that's difficult, to take on a challenge, and you do that, then that's what your life is going to be like. Nobody's going to be successful at anything without some sort of risk, without some sort of challenge. The muscle doesn't grow unless you challenge it. And neither does business, neither does relationships and things like that. And so you got to be, if you dare to step up to it and go after it, sometimes you, and all the time, I think you're going to be hit with hardship. But if you dare to do it, then you increase your chances of making something happen. So that's why I say that life is exactly what you dare to make it. But there's the whole saying is life is exactly what you dare to make it. And fortune favors the bold. And so if you're bold enough to dare to do something different than everybody else is doing, then fortune will favor you. Fortune will follow you. Fortune will show up in front of you. And the last part of it is dare to be magnificent. But here's the deal. Magnificent isn't just to be great. Magnificent means I say magnificence is to magnify the essence of who you are. And the essence of who all of us are is that we have an electrical spark. We have energy. It's called life. And the more excited we are, the more we radiate with that electrical energy. And the more we radiate with that electrical energy, the more enthusiasm we have, the more positive we are, the more optimistic we are. And to me, optimistic means we are able to see more different options than just the options that are just in front of us. And so when we do that, I call it the 60-20-20 rule. 60% of achieving anything is our psychology, is what we think. If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. 20% is the energy that is produced because you think a certain way. If you're, and when I say energy, I just mean electricity, because you know as well as I do, you're a physician as well, that we run on electrical current. And one of my dear friends is Dr. Tennant, and he literally has measured what each cell, the microvoltages that each cell needs to not just function, but to repair itself and to do more. And so we can, our bodies, our muscles, our piezoelectric cells, they're like batteries. But so when we move and when we get excited, we create more electricity. And there's so much more to it. And then so when we have more electricity, that's 20%. That other 20% is something that I call magnetism. We literally attract things into our lives and we go towards what we want. See, people talk about the laws of attraction, which is very real, but that's only one of the 21 immutable laws of magnetism. Two magnets are attracting each other. A magnet and steel, the magnet is attracting the steel isn't attracting the magnet. And so all of us, to put it in human terms, all of us want stuff, and you may even attract it into your life, but all of us don't go get it because the fear gets in the way. And fear, if you take two magnets and you put them together, they will stick. But if you turn one of them over, it'll push the other magnet away. And that's what happens with our psychology. If we think negative thoughts and fear and all those things, we're flipping the magnet over. Our electromagnetic energy comes down and we're pushing away what we want. That's why people sabotage. People say, I want to lose weight and I eat too much cake. But when the cake shows up, guess what happens? their thoughts go, I really want the cake and I'm weak and or they'll make excuses. They'll say, I'll stop eating the cake tomorrow. As soon as that does, the magnetic energy comes down and they push away what they want and they pull towards them then they go after the cake. And so that's an oversimplification, but that whole mechanism is going on all the time in all of us.
Yeah. That's our challenge.
Yes.
And you said life is exactly what you dare to make it. And then you said the world is designed to give you what you want. You have to ask for it and go after it. What would the world be like if everyone got what they wanted?
I think it would be better. I think it would be a better place. I think that... Let me put it this way. We get what we need, 90% of us. We need oxygen. We need food. We need water. We need, so many things. We get those things. That's a really great question. I think the world would be a better place. I think we'd be kinder to each other. I think that we would be kinder to the earth. I think that that life would be better if everybody got what they want. The challenge is most people don't know what they want. Most people know more about what they don't want than what they do want. And so I don't know that that will ever happen, that people will get what they want, that type of utopian thought. And I'm going to do my best to help people get, first off, recognize what they want, what they truly want. Because, oftentimes, especially even in my practice and even what I do now, I ask people, what do you want? And they go, well, I don't want to be scared anymore, or I don't want to be overweight anymore, or I don't want to be this. And I'll go, okay, Grady, what do you want? And they go, I told you, I don't want this, I don't want that. And I go, no, you're telling me what you don't want. And when you are focused on what you don't want, that's what you go after. And it's not that, because people always ask me, well, if I focus on bad things, are bad things going to happen to me? The answer is no. The answer is you're literally pushing away, just like those magnets, what you do want, but you're going after what you don't want. You're putting yourself in those types of situations. And so in doing that, the challenge with that is most people don't know what they want. And then again, all the way back to we're allowing ourselves to be manipulated by media, entertainment, and all those things. And that just takes away all of our time to even think about what we want. We spend so little time thinking about what we want. So then that little time that we're spent on it, we have so little energy and emotion about what we want. And so there we have so little activity about getting what we want. And then the results are writing us on the wall.
Yeah. Because you helped a lot of people in your practice, and now you're reaching an enormous amount of people with your seminars. Mm-hmm. I will have some questions about the A factor later on.
Yeah, sure.
You're also on stage with other events. You're also partnering with industry pioneers like Les Brown, Jim Rohn, and Tony Robbins. You have a roster of coaching clients that includes Oscar and Grammy winning artists, Olympic athletes, Fortune 500 CEOs, and even royalty. Do you still look up to some people?
Do I look up to some people?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Those people that you mentioned, a lot of them are my mentors, and I look up to them as well. As a matter of fact, the one that you mentioned, Les Brown, I would not be doing what I do now had not been for Les Brown. Because I had known... I've known Tony for many, many years, and I was a musician when I met Tony. I had no intention of doing this at all. I had already been to school and already, got my degree in psychology and all that, but I had no intent. I wanted to be a musician, and that's what I was when I met Tony, and Tony helped me get rid of my job and become a musician, But one night I came in and I saw Les Brown doing a motivational speech to 30,000 people. And that inspired me. And I thought, I put that in the back of my mind that that's, here's a man who sort of looked like he was a black man. But it inspired me that this is something that I could do. And then later on, when my music career ended, that's what I moved into. I started doing that, and I started recognizing that I wanted to meet that man. And he's my dear friend now. He's part of my institute now. And so, yes, I look up to several people. I always do, because I can learn from anybody. I look up to people. I look up to any and everybody, because what my true belief is that everybody can teach me something. Everybody is better at something that I'm not. And if I'm humble enough and open-minded enough and ask questions, most people are willing to teach you and tell you what they know as well.
Yeah, because you studied traditional psychology.
Yes.
Later met Tony. He worked with different techniques. And the first book that you wrote together was Unlimited Power, A Black Choice.
Yes.
What reactions did you get to this first book?
The reason I wrote that book was, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I became quite successful financially at a very young age. When I read the book Think and Grow Rich, I didn't have any money. I was homeless. I wanted to make some money. Very long story short, my first fortune, for lack of a better term, came from real estate. I took a real estate course one weekend, and I went out and I bought 26 houses in less than a year and a half's time. And I still benefit from that to this day. And my friends... And then I also became very successful in music at the time after that, after, you know, I met Tony, and he helped me get over my fear of quitting my job, because I was afraid to quit my job and pursue music, because music was very unstable.
Yeah.
But all along, my friends, my black friends would come to me and they go, "What are you doing?" You know, they knew me, you know, from high school. They knew me as not being successful. And they go, "Tell us what you're doing," you know. And I'd go, "I read these books, I go to these seminars, and I listen to these people." And they go, "But those are white people." And I go, "And what difference does it make?" And they go, "Well, we can't relate to them." So I went to Tony and I go, "Listen, when I go to your seminars, 90% of the time, it's only me as the black person that's in the audience." At that time. Now, obviously, it's more. But I said, "Let's write a book together, and let's bring this information to the African-American, the black community."
So, and so you became the role model.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that I became the role model, because that's not what the book is about. The book is not about me. As a matter of fact, I went and I got so many references of black people who are successful. I did kind of like what Napoleon Hill did, but then I also, it was a co-write with Tony, we used the processes and techniques that he teach in that book as well. But we used all African-American and black references and stories, and that book became a bestseller, and that made a difference in a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, because another book of yours has the brilliant title, Awesome Sauce,
yes.
How to Win with Yourself First and Live in the Zone.
Yes.
Are you in the zone every day, or do you sometimes have a bad day?
Of course I have bad days. I don't, no, I'm going to take that back. I never have a bad day. I have bad moments.
Yeah.
I don't, and I'm not saying that because I feel like I'm better than anybody else. I'm saying that because I practice what I preach. I do what I say. And if you do, you'll program yourself to, even when something bad happens, you snap out of it quicker. I get asked a lot, often, that if I could go back in time and talk to my younger self, what advice would I give myself? And the advice is always the same. Learn the skill of snapping out of it quicker. It meaning feeling bad, being scared, or whatever. Because when you do that, you become, what I say, optimistic, and you have more options. And you don't stay there. So I don't have bad days. I do have bad moments. You know, bad stuff happens to me just like it does to everybody else.
Yeah. Because you are the author of several bestsellers.
Yes.
The third one is Dare to be Magnificent.
Yes.
The five key elements of an unshakable, extraordinary life.
Yes.
Maybe can you briefly explain one of these
that
five
one,
essential
I,
habits?
I have to give credit to my dear friend who wrote the foreword to it, and that is Les Brown. Les is my dear friend. And funny story, I was telling this to the group yesterday. When COVID happened, all of my live events went away, all of them, including the one that we did yesterday. We booked it back before COVID, but then COVID happened and you couldn't travel. But it was a bit of a blessing in disguise because it gave me the time to write books and things like that. But the next phone call that I got when I learned that all my gigs are gone was Les Brown. And Les goes, and we've been known each other for a long time, but he said, hey, let's do something together. Finally, we have time. And I go, okay, great, let's do it. We got the time. And he goes, I need you to write a book. And I go, I don't want to write another book. I've written by then I had five other books. And I don't like writing. It's not my favorite thing to do. And he goes, okay, so I'm going to take you through this process. And he took me through this process. And because of the process that he took me through, I really enjoyed writing that book. And the book are the five things that really, not my father was the catalyst of it, but the five things in life that if you master those things and you make those things a bigger part of your life, then your life will be more magnificent. And they are, number one, discipline, okay? And discipline is to, like I said, to do the hard stuff when it's time to do it. Number two is tenacity. And that means to continue to do the hard stuff. Activity, as we talked about before. Next is energy. Now this that you and I share in common, because health is I'm not gonna say the number one thing, but it's very, very important to me. And if you don't have your health, then you don't have energy. Next is joy. And that's another one of my books, by the way. I wrote the book called Get Happy Now, because happy people live longer, have better relationships, have more energy, or, you know, all that stuff. And then the last thing is contribution, is to help others, be kind, be a good person and help other people. And if you do those, if you incorporate those five things in your life, I promise you, I guarantee your life is better. And the book is not just read it and get these stories. There's actually exercises in the book that you do them and you'll start to instill those qualities in yourself as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I could also feel it during your seminar last weekend. There also was a lot of fun and joy.
Yeah. That's part of how we get people to get it in their nervous system versus just knowledge.
Yeah, because Steven Detmer of Success Gids, we brought you tomorrow in this office. Yes. And I'm very grateful for Steven and Gerben. Wrote in the workbook about the A-Factor seminar. Throughout this weekend, Joseph will not only impart invaluable wisdom of on how to attract abundance into your life, but he will also guide you through a profound process of personal transformation. And next year, so in 2025, you will be in Amsterdam again for the A-Factor seminar. And the A, so attraction factor, is the study and application of human neuropsychology and behavior combined with the physical laws of attraction and magnetism and manifestation. And then you were telling, knowledge is nothing more than stored information. Explanation without execution is at best amusing and a form of temporary hopefulness. Wisdom, on the other hand, is knowledge acted upon until research are produced. And why is your A-Factor seminar so powerful for people?
Well, first off, I really want to give credit to and thank Stefan and Herber and Success Kids, because otherwise I wouldn't get to be here. And they're very good friends, and we've worked together for many, many years. And to answer your question, why it's so important is this. You're not going to get it anywhere else. And I truly believe that we're doing, when people come to this event, they don't just leave going, I had a good time, you know, and I had it was entertaining, and I learned some stuff. They leave changed. They leave so changed that things start to happen in their lives. And it's not just I teach them things. It's like you said it in the beginning, it's not knowledge. They are going to learn some things, but we're going to do some things. And when we do things, then they get results right then and there. Because I believe this. Number one, you have to have content that solves the problems of the masses. And the problems are those 10 things that I just said about, you know, procrastination, hesitation, all those things and everything. Number two, you have to be able to, in order to change somebody's life or help them change their life, you have to be able to get results in the moment, right now. Because if not, it's just knowledge. It's just, hey, that sounds good, that's great, that kind of thing. I had a good time. So we purposely, the exercises that they do there, and it's not that I do something to them. I'm the teacher. I always say I have the glory job. I'm on stage and I get to do all that stuff. But I'm just a teacher. The results that they get are because they do it. And then when they get it, then they go, wow. Not only can I, you know, does this stuff work, but I did it. And then the third thing, which is perhaps one of the most important, all of them are important, is that when they leave, I give them something to do for at least 10 days. And if you do it for something for 10 days, then your likelihood of continuing to do it. So I give them something to do so that they do it when I'm not around as well. And we started at the seminar. Day number one, they have an exercise that they do. We stop at about 7 o'clock, and for the rest of the evening, they do that exercise. Then they show up the next morning and they're different because they've done the exercise. Then day number two, they have another exercise that we do. The squashing the fear and getting and learning the stop technique. And now they have two exercises that they do, and they get a result then and there. And then day number three is that identity that I talked about. They create a new identity for themselves, and this is life changing. And I'm not saying that to sound flamboyant, but it is life changing, because when you think of yourself differently, and most people never even know what they think of themselves. They don't know how good or bad they're thinking of themselves, and you should see it there, because the place is electric. So it's staged. And then that last day they have that identity. And then, so now they only have three things to do. It takes maybe a half hour of their day to do those three things every day for the next 10 days. And that's when it changes, because that's when it becomes activity. And we have people that have been to, I don't know how many we've done, I think 4 or 5 of these. And we have people that keep coming back. They keep coming back. And when you ask them, why do you keep coming back? They never say, because, you know, I forgot it. They come back because they want to. I always say to people, look, the people that are successful in life, I don't care whether it's going to the gym or whether it is, you know, practicing music or whatever it is. The ones that keep coming back and going and staying in the game are the ones that go further faster. So those people come back. They almost know what I'm going to say. But they come back because they get to be in the environment of like-minded people. And they get to be examples for other people as well. And so we have a great deal of people, and I love seeing these people again. They're my friends. They not only keep coming back, but they also bring their friends and family back with them as well. And the reason that's so important is because, first off, they want their friends and family to have that a better life and experience as well. But here's the greatest part about it is when you have people around you that think like you, a group of people moves quicker, faster, easier, better, and more efficient than one person. So I always tell people, look, and when you leave this seminar, you're going to go home and the people around you have not been at this seminar. So you've got to keep your energy up. That's why I give them the exercises. But other people, we had a lady at this last seminar who brought her whole team of people with her, you know, from her business. And she didn't bring them just because, you know, she wanted them to see me. She brought them because she knows they're going to change. So people keep coming back. We encourage them to come back, but we also encourage them to bring their friends with them and other people as well, because that's how we're going to change the world. In my personal opinion, you know, I live in America. Our politics is different than it is here in Holland. But politics is politics. And it's not going to be our government. It's not going to be politics. It's not going to be policy that changes things. It's going to be people that are bold enough to step up and dare to make life magnificent and do things different. And so that's what we're inspiring people to do.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny when the attenders invite their family and friends, then it's kind of a healthy psychology virus.
Yes, yes. Oh, I like that. Yeah, psychology virus, yes.
because you teach them a lot, they experience it, you do a lot of exercise together, they get results, and you said that traumas, they only happen once, or bad things, but the memory lives on inside of our heads over and over again. And with neuroencoding, because you're the founder of the Neuroencoding Institute, you will be able to quickly change what happens inside the brain. And why don't we teach this to children at school?
There's no money in it.
No?
There's no money in it.
It's about economics.
It's just like, you know, with health. There's no money in keeping people healthy. And I would say that is one of the reasons. I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons. The other reason is because they didn't learn it, teachers didn't learn it, they don't know to teach it. I taught at UCLA for 7 years, and the professors, my other colleagues that were there that were teaching, they can teach it, but they didn't practice it.
There's a big difference.
Yeah, there is a difference. And so I personally believe that we need more people that are examples. I have a saying, and the saying is, those of us that dare to dream while the rest of the world is having a nightmare, we're not only going to create the abundance that we want for ourselves, but we're also going to be examples for other people, the rest of the world, to see and go, I can do that as well. And even if it's just inspiring people. You know, I created the Neuroencoding Institute because I want, we teach other people to do what I do. That's how I believe my contribution to the world is because if other people can do what I do, and it's simple, you know, it might sound complicated, but when you take it, you go, well, this is simple. And we even have students that were at the seminar, and I watch them as they watch me do what I do. And I see him going, I know what he's doing. I know how he's speaking. Because, and I'll give you an example. The Institute is, I teach people how to, for themselves first, program themselves so that they default to their best thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. So they default to that. So when something happens, they don't stay in that fear. They don't stay in their sympathetic nervous system, that amygdala part of the brain that says fight or flight. They get out of it very quickly, and they go, okay, I can do this, I can do that. And it happens automatically, so they program themselves to do that. And they can teach that, and they can do that for other people. We have psychologists, psychiatrists, we have people that are coaches, people that want to be coaches, and we also have people that they just want to be better people. But one of the things that I teach them is how to speak from the stage, how to present from the stage. Because people, I get this all the time, and I hope this doesn't sound arrogant, but people come up to me and they go, there's something about you. You know, I don't know what it is, but, you know, when you're on stage, there's something different about you. And I got to be honest with you. What it is about me is mechanical. It's something I'm doing every single time. And so that's what I teach people. Other speakers, you know, when they get that, they go, they become something special. They become different than a speaker. And what I said about the people that were in the audience that are my students, they're sitting there and they're going, I know what he's doing at this point. I know what he's doing at this point. I know what he's doing. And people can't help it. They are drawn in. The audience is drawn in. So now if I teach other people to do what I do, then they'll get out there and they'll do it, and I get to impact more and more people. And I always tell people, I'm going to give you the courses that you can teach. I'm going to give you the speeches that you can speak. I'm going to teach you how to do it. I'm going to teach you how to change yourself. I'm going to teach you how to attract clients. And you don't even have to mention my name at all. I'm not looking for the fame. I'm not looking for any of that stuff. And you can make it your own. And that's what they do. We have people out there that have clients, you know, 80, a couple ladies have, one lady has two $80,000 clients. People have $20,000 clients, $5,000 clients, and people that they're working with. Whereas in their traditional, whether they're a psychiatrist, psychologist, or coach or whatever, you know, I don't know what the hourly rate is now as a psychologist, but it's like maybe $100 an hour or something like that. That's great. It's not about the money. But the reason those people come to me, those people that are already in those professions, is number one, they don't have a lot of clients. And then number two, they're not effective. Mm-hmm. And people look at me and they go, well, why are you so effective? you know, because I think you asked, you know, is that what I do anymore? And I don't. I'm more teaching now. And I could. I have clients that pay me upwards of $350,000 a year to work with. And I have one client that I've worked with them for 17 years. And I have others, you know, that, you know, several other years, and they just keep coming back. So I don't take on any more of those because I'm putting my efforts there. The last thing I'll say is in that industry, it is $1 billion a day industry. $1 billion a day. Forbes magazine 3 years ago said within 5 years it's going to be $1 billion a day industry. It's that way right now. So from a financial standpoint, it's very lucrative. From an impact standpoint, it is very effective. From a personal change standpoint, it's very effective. And the reason we do the A factor is at the very, very least, it is an introduction to it. You know, many people come to the A factor and all they want to do is come back to another A factor. They don't want to be a coach and they don't want to be anything like that. But they know they're becoming better people as a result of it. They're attracting more and they're becoming more magnetic to what they want.
Yeah. And then you're always talking about further faster.
Yes.
I also found your Further Faster podcast.
Yes.
And you said to assist you in going further faster and becoming wealthy. And wealthy means to be healthy, happy and financially abundant.
Yes.
And it was beautiful that you spoke about the 6 inches of real estate between our ears.
Exactly.
Gratitude is also very important.
Extremely,
you said
yes.
It's the antidote to fear, uncertainty and doubt.
Yes.
Practicing the skill of being grateful for any and everything will condition your soul to expect the best for yourself and those that you love, that you know and love. The effect of being grateful will astonish you and the results will multiply both in material, emotional and spiritual well-being. What are you grateful for right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Speaking to you in this moment, and I mean that from my heart, and I'll tell you why. Because I admire you, I've just met you, but learning about you told me about you, Stefan told me about you and everything, and what you're doing is you're impacting the world in a way from a health standpoint and this podcast, and you're reaching out to people, and that is my passion in life, is to reach out to other people. So I'm unbelievably grateful for this opportunity to do this. I've got, you know, I wake up every morning and I'm grateful that I'm still alive. I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for all those things. But you ask what I'm grateful for right now, it's this moment here with you right now.
Thank you, Joseph. I'm also grateful that you are here now in my studio. It's a big honor. You are 17 years old.
And you're 17?
Yeah, maybe you might, but 70, eh?
Yes.
And you are extremely vital.
Yes.
Do you have some vitality rules that you integrate in your daily life?
I do. First off, I always want to make sure that when I speak about something, people are clear about what I mean by what I say, because we can have different understandings of different things. If I say car, you might be thinking of a Tesla, okay? And I'm thinking about a 1938 Plymouth Business Coupe, mm-hmm. but they're still cars, right? So vitality to me means to have the thoughts that power the energy that powers the activity to do the things that are necessary to have a healthy body, a healthy mind, and healthy behaviors. And, you know, that's a little complicated, but the truth of the matter is what we put into our bodies through our eyes, ears, mouth, nose, the feelings and all of those things, that's going to make a difference on everything. And so my belief is this. I'm 70 years old, and at the risk of sounding arrogant, I don't look it, I don't feel it, and I certainly don't act it. I act like a little kid most of the time. And that is a result of several years ago, I learned the principles of how we function as human beings. And I'm preaching to the choir when I say this, because you're the expert on this more than I am. The foods that we have been conditioned to eat, the things that we have been conditioned to look at and watch, the poisons that are in the foods and so on and so forth. Most people have allowed themselves to let that be their norm. I was showing my friends last night, and there's a, and you can go online and look at it. There's two experiments that everybody should, with a couple things I want to say very, very quickly. Number one, the food companies do not have our best interest at heart. There's no money in keeping us healthy. You know, if you think about it, most people drink milk, okay? And milk stopped being milk 50 years ago. Again, I know you know this, but you know, I'm saying this on reason. Because if you think about it, why would you have to fortify milk with vitamins when that substance that comes out of that animal is designed with everything that it needs to make a baby cow grow from, you know, 100 pounds when it's born to 400 pounds by the time it stops, you know, drinking that milk? And the reason being is because we cook the milk to, they say, to kill the germs. But no, they're doing it because they want it to last longer. We homogenize the milk, which means we add chemicals to it to make it so that it lasts longer on the shelf and it doesn't separate. And then we add sugars and flavorings to it. But that all those processes take all of the nutrients out of it. So we put vitamins and things in it. But you know as well as I do, if it's the wrong kind of supplements and vitamins, it's useless. So things like that and things like, so I always say that the food companies don't have our best interest at heart. There is a video, there's several of them. One of them is they take a hamburger, and let's just say it's from, I'm not going to say the company that it's made from, but let's just say it begins with a big M. And they put that hamburger and some fries in a glass container, and they leave it there. And you know, a year later, it's not molded, it's not whatever. But if they take another, you know, natural hamburger or that's made without preservatives, and they put it there, it's rotted within a few days. It's got mold on it and all those things. There's another video. A guy has molten brass. He heats it up till it's a liquid, right? It's liquid brass. And he pours it over this hamburger, and it doesn't hurt the hamburger. What do you think that's doing to our insides? It's designed, you know, we can't digest that. And so we eat that stuff. It's poison. And that poison makes us sick. And then we go to the doctor, traditional physician. And again, I respect you so much. You told about your story about when you became a doctor, and you realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm not really addressing the root cause. You go to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, here, eat this pill. And the pill does nothing to change the disease. It does nothing to change, to tell you to stop eating the stuff that's killing you in the first place. It does keep you alive for a little bit longer, and they get to sell more medication, but it's not helping people. And so people like yourself are making it evident and making people aware. And I think that is always the first step in giving them other choices. And people are starting to realize that, wait a minute, if they look at somebody like myself, for example, and they go, this guy's old as hell, but he's got so much energy and he's healthy. I want to do that. I want to be like that. So we get to be examples for people as well.
Yeah, great. My last question. In the workbook of your DA Factor seminar, I read the following. A method of knowing what you want, mixed with belief, mixed with emotion, mixed with action, is the foundation of the process. Although it is not necessary for you to know how and why it works, it is important for you to know that you are the captain of your own fate and creator of your future. What if people are unsure whether they should come to your seminar next year, in 2025? What advice would you give them?
Well, obviously, I always like to answer the last question first. The obvious answer is because if you want more for your life, where else are you going to get it? What else are you going to do? Are you going to get it by watching more television? Are you going to get it from somebody that's already unhealthy? Are you going to get it from going to school? No. There's only one thing like this, and I hope this doesn't sound arrogant. You know, I'm so grateful to Success Kids and you know, my business partners that I work with there, because there's nothing else like it. Nothing else like it. So the last question, should they go? The answer is yeah. You don't just go, you plan it now. Because when you do, what happens is you have something to look forward to. And that's what pulls us as human beings. That's what makes us get up in the morning, stay up late, and do the extra stuff, is because we have something going in front of us. And I forgot your second question.
What if people are unsure? Eh?
Oh, yeah, that's okay. You should be unsure. You're probably going to give Success Kids their website and their information.
That's my final note in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. So go there and take a look, and you'll see. You'll experience it. You'll see the experience of other people changing. You'll hear the testimonials of other people that have been before. And it's like nothing else. And I always say this over and over again. I hope I don't sound like I'm being arrogant and being, boastful about this. I created this because it's what happened. Somebody helped me in my life. I've evolved it and put all those things together. But everybody wants more. Everybody wants more. Everybody wants to be wealthy, healthier, happier, and financially abundant. But most people do not have the process to be able to do it. And they also don't have the process to be able to not just bring it into their lives, but make them go after it, make themselves get up early, stay up late, do the extra stuff. They don't have the process to be able to get rid of the fear. Lastly, I'll say this. There's a saying that I love, and it was said by the heavyweight champion boxer of the world at the time, back many, many years ago. His name is Joe Frazier. And he said, between the promise and the payoff is always process. The promise is what you want. Everybody wants to be wealthy, healthy, happy, and financially abundant. But in order to get that, there's stuff that you got to do. There's process that you have to go through. And as far as I'm concerned, there's not much out there that's teaching us process. And it's the reason why we created the A Factor and the Neuroencoding Institute. And so I encourage everybody that's listening, if you get anything from this, go to what you're going to tell them here in a moment and check it out.
Yeah. Your website, your personal website, is josephmcclendon.com. And final note, if people want to know more about you in the event The A Factor in 2025, visit the link succesgids.nl/oersterk for a free ebook from Joseph. And we will also add this link in the description of the podcast. Joseph.
I would encourage them to go to that link more than mine.
Of course.
Go to that one. You get more out of that about, especially because it's here in Holland.
I will also put this link in my newsletter.
Okay,
so,
perfect. Yeah.
Joseph, many thanks for coming to our podcast, and all the best in the future with all your beautiful and powerful activities.
It is my absolute pleasure, and thank you for having me.